Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlawed Picks podcast. We are talking about UFC 292 today. We're going to do the main card,
yeah,
which we think has got Chris Weidman against Brad Tavares somewhere on it. We just don't exactly know where. According to Tapology, it's before Marlon against Pedro.
Yeah, but the UFC embedded said that it was the featured bout on. Right before the two title fights.
Okay. So potentially you need to skip to the next fight and the next fight and then come back to us. No, that's not right, is it? No, that's right, yeah.
You're just confusing everybody. We just started.
Okay, right. Let's start again. Let's wipe the slate clean. UFC 292. We're going to start with Chris Weidman against Brad Tavares because we're not sure exactly where it is on the card right now.
Exactly.
There is some speculation based on UFC embedded that it might be higher up on the card, but we are going to start with it as if it's the first fight of the main card.
Yes,
because we're crazy like that. Today's show is brought to you by two wonderful companies. First of all, Harney and Sons. If you go to harney.com, you will be able to find a selection of amazing teas. You've got Golden Milk at the moment, which is not classed as a tea, is it?
It's just the best. It's honestly, it's so good.
You love it.
I went through like a Golden Milk type of turmeric thing for a while. And it was because I don't know if it had anything to do with the fact that my body felt really like inflamed. And I was just like, maybe it was a recovery thing.
Yeah.
So I got into this just crazy binge on Golden Milk, like the turmeric mix. And I've tried so many places. And when this arrived and I just made it, I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're staining all the insides of the mugs yellow.
We're going to
get some yellow mugs. But you love that. I've got the organic tune-up. That's what I'm drinking right now. Mm. This is like cloves and it's got some lemon in it, some peppermint. It's a good mix. Harney.com. If you use the code FULLREPTILE, you'll get 15% off. They have all kinds of sales. That they've got a sale on breakfast teas coming up. It's a wellness teas right now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just awesome teas. If you're into tea, there's something on this website for you. Definitely go and check them out. And our other friends, AG1. We love this stuff. You are the AG1, like, soldier in the house.
Yeah.
You wake up every morning, you get yours in, you remind me when I wake up. It's really, really good stuff. A great way to start your day before you brew up your tea. 12 ounces of water, you add a scoop in, you mix it up, get it in your system before you start the day. I mean, it just covers all your baselines. 75 vitamins and minerals, probiotics, all kinds of stuff that your body needs to thrive, to function at its best, a clear brain, a good night's sleep. You use it constantly, don't you?
Yeah,
I miss from time to time, and I do notice when I miss. I feel a bit lethargic around sort of 3:30. I just clearly notice a difference. I'm just like, right, oh, it's like 7 p.m. I'm still going strong. So why do you use it? You love it.
I've been using it for quite a while now, and I've just felt just my energy levels and overall how much I get sick or actually don't get sick. And just everything has been, it's not been just so up and down all the time. It's been really leveled and regulated. And it's been more noticeable for me the longer I've been using it, because now I can look back and I'm like, oh, I'm not getting sick as much, or
right.
Oh, I'm not feeling as
And we
lethargic.
Go to grubby places as well. So, you know, like probiotics is not only a benefit internally as well as externally to keep you safe from all kinds of skin infections and stuff. It's really, really good stuff. If a comprehensive solution is what you need from your supplement routine, then try AG1. So if you order AG1 using our link, which is Outlawed, you'll get a year's supply of D3 and K2. Essential, especially if you live in places that don't get a lot of sunshine or if you spend too much time indoors. Which, of course, we all need to get outside. But bolstering your D3 is definitely beneficial alongside your AG1. You'll also get 5 free travel packs, which are awesome as well. You throw them in your bag. You always make sure you're covered when you're on the road. So if you go to drinkag1.com/outlawed, you will get this awesome deal with this the year's free supply of D3, the travel packs, as well as everything you need to add this in. Just a good daily habit, good daily routine. Get your AG1 in your system, you brew up a tea,
We literally have all our drinks good covered right
that's
now.
That's it.
Morning throughout the day.
Covered for beverages. So we're going to talk about UFC 292, right?
Yes.
We're going to talk about... oh, I know what I was going to mention briefly, because then I can send Jamie the videos, because I haven't put them anywhere. The Jake Paul-Nate Diaz fight, we just spent 2 minutes talking about
How wild was
it? Right? So it was mad. So you were watching it on TV, and mm-hmm. I was there, and it was like... I'm trying to think of an atmosphere that was similar, that was MMA or boxing or something. And like the McGregor Mayweather fight, like, is up there. I would say probably the most hectic, craziest environment was McGregor Brandao. Like, that always kind of sets a bar, but that was a smaller audience. I think there was like sort of, I don't know, 12,000-13,000 in there for the Diaz Paul fight. But the atmosphere was wild. It was just so crazy. But it was just like Jake Paul's in there pacing up and down, then Nate comes out and the whole arena just lifts. It was pretty wild.
So how did the boxing specific people react to Nate Diaz? Because they shouldn't really know much about Nate Diaz, you know? So how did they react to the fact that he was walking out and so many people were screaming for him?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, they recognized that it was a different crowd. They recognized that it wasn't like a pro boxing crowd, right? Because the first observation is that people were there for the undercard. Like, the first fight, I think, was 5:30, and there were people coming into the building from 4:30 and getting their seats.
Oh,
and there was like a big mix of people. There were like parents with their kids there, and there were like older people there. It was like a real wide like variety of people. But they were there for the whole show. They were there for all of the fights. And like, by the time the main card started, which was an absolute bang, I'm trying to remember what the fighters' names were. It was these two Mexican fighters that just went at it. It was Roy Jones was in one of the kids' corners. It was like more than 50% full. And like the pro boxers around, like the ones that were commentating alongside, they were like where are all these people? Like, why are all these people here? They're not used to people showing up that early.
Yeah.
And then by the time Nate walked out and they, I don't know, it's just a difficult thing to comprehend. Like, He's just untouchable. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. It didn't matter what happened. Like, he won by guillotine. It didn't matter. You know what I mean? No matter what, the crowd there were like, the people there for Nate were diehard Nate, no matter what happened. He's like, you know what I mean?
How many messages did you get after?
I got quite a few. I got some really nice ones. People like really enjoyed the event. I got some that weren't so kind, especially some people that had 209 in the name as well. There were a few people from Stockton that I think they were just disappointed that the fight didn't go better. You know, like, I get it, but like I'm literally sitting ringside, just calling what I'm seeing, and especially in that proximity as well. I don't know how it comes across on TV. I need to watch it with the volume up, but it's like, I don't know, the shots are always more visceral when you're closer. You can feel them a bit more. And there were I just don't remember a point. I don't remember a shot that Nate landed that had a crack to it. And nothing that like Jake Paul kind of got his attention, you know? Like, there were moments where Nate landed a few shots and like Jake Paul was a bit startled because he was under pressure. But there were times when Jake hit Nate and you could see Nate, like his eyes spin a little bit, you know? And it, I don't know, it was different. There was a different impact from both of them. And I don't think that Nate got to the pace that he needed to have the effect that he had, that he needed to on Jake, right? He was always following him. He didn't really cut him off a great deal. And any time he was out of range, he was overstepping to get into range, which meant then that they were smothered and the referee would just separate them.
Yeah.
So he was like, I don't know, I don't think he played to his strengths. I think he could have done a lot better with a smarter approach. And I don't know whether it's because he wasn't that bothered or because he felt like he'd just be too much for Jake, or I don't know. I mean, you can imagine if they were sparring and he was forcing Jake to do 30 rounds with him with headgear and a groin guard, like 16-ounce gloves, Nate would batter him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because he'll get to him eventually and he'll wear him down. And in a fight to the death, like, Nate's always going to get to you somehow.
Do you think that's why it makes him so, like, even when he loses, he wins? Like, Leon Edwards, it was very one way till he just slapped punched Leon Edwards and pointed at him, started laughing.
Yeah.
So then everybody was just posting that, and now everybody posting a guillotine, which like he didn't like. It's not really a guillotine; it's just the funniness of it.
Yeah, for sure. But it was just kind of staking a claim on his ability to just win if there were no rules, if it was a fight, right? You know. Because I know, like, we call boxing matches fights, and there is a fighting element to it, of course, but in its essence, it's still a boxing match, right?
Yeah.
Like if it was a fight, like for me a fight is like I'm still pumping the brakes in the unified rules to not headbutt and bite, and you know what I mean? Like that's a fight. But I'm much, much closer to that with MMA, which means that MMA for me, especially under the unified rules, like with elbows, is much closer. Like, I mean, I like for me,
I still would consider it a fight, though. It's just more like rule limited.
Yeah, but that's the thing: is it so specific that they have to stay within a criteria, a technique, a range, right? And how am I best? How the best? I'm trying to figure out the best way of explaining this so it makes sense. I'm like, okay, so what you've done is you've taken a piece of fighting,
yeah,
right, the little bit with the hands, and you're putting that in a professional context with big gloves, and we're turning the volume up on that to the point where it becomes a thing in itself.
Okay.
Right? And both people are going at it so hard that's where the fighting element comes into it.
Yeah.
But the actual fighting, I'm...
Yeah, but that's like...
I'm not explaining it very well.
Look, do you know how many coaches and stuff that I've been to that have said like, oh, MMA doesn't work because in a street fight, I'll just gouge your eyes, do 3 groin strikes, and then, you know, it's just like, all right, dude, I'm pretty sure... with how out of shape you are, like you won't even be able to fully extend your hand.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but it's like
it's not the same me telling you, because obviously you've competed MMA and do all these things, but I just feel like that sometimes people cling on to the fact that it's not a fight, but that's not kind of true, because like. If Mike Tyson can punch you in the face into like a coma, tell me that's not a fight.
Yeah, but you can't do everything within your power to stop him doing that. Short of you know, like biting and headbutting. Like,
I mean, he bit.
But, of course he did. Of course, but that was the thing. He broke the rules and he lost the contest because of it.
Yeah,
right. I don't know. All it's like grappling, right? Like if MMA if a fight is here. If like a fight to the death is here,
yeah,
like no weapons, like tooth and claw, everything goes, like to the death
for the kingdom,
like BJ Penn to the death. Jamie, you've got to find that clip from Beavis and Butthead with BJ Penn in it. Just honestly, I'll find it and I'll send it to you. We've got to throw it in here to the death. It's so funny. It was Beavis and Butthead doing an impression of BJ Penn. Anyway, Right, that's here, right? That's the extremist extreme where it's you or them.
Yeah.
One of you's walking out, right? And then you take a few things off the table and you add in some gloves and a referee and it's MMA. But it's not that far away from that. One championship where you can knee him in the head is a little bit closer again.
Okay.
Right? Are you understanding? Masvidal's
aren't they not allowed to elbow, though?
Yeah, exactly. So elbow and knee. No, elbow and knee.
Oh, you can't elbow on the ground.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So like the more rules you implement, the further away it gets from the actual fight itself, right? So are we going off on a mad tangent? But it's all right. We'll circle back, right? So like say like Masvidal's thing with no gloves,
yes,
right? That's even closer to fight. Like the original UFCs were even a step closer because it was don't bite, don't fish up, don't eye gouge. Like you could do anything. You punch to the groin, whatever you wanted in those old school MMA, UFC fights. So like every time we add a rule in, we get a little bit further away, right? So then somewhere a bit further down here between like after Muay Thai and kickboxing, you move into the boxing range, where there's an element of fighting, but it's so very specific that it's far away from a fight itself.
Yeah, but you get better technical things of it.
Yeah, no, I'm
if somebody
sure.
does the fight to the death thing, their boxing is going to be pretty like crap in comparison to a boxer because they haven't refined that thing.
Yeah, but no, because you can still be trained. Like so.
But you're not going to be as good as somebody who only does that all the time. Like nobody's a boxer champion and an MMA champion and a jiu-jitsu champion.
Exactly, but that's the thing. That's the thing. So like in Nate's head, it's always but if I see you on the street outside my house, like he's going to slap him a couple of times, he's going to tackle him to the floor and he's going to choke him out.
Yeah.
Right? That's in Nate's head, that's what happens. In a real fight, that's what happens.
I see him just like stabbing
somebody. Did I not say that he was going to guillotine him?
Yeah,
right? It was obvious it was going to happen. It was the easiest way to punk him, especially because Jake Paul puts his head low.
Mm. So how was seeing Nick Diaz after? Because you posted a photo with him.
Yeah, he was like, I don't know. I don't know whether it's because he was so close to the fight and because he'd just been watching Nate fight. And you could just tell he wanted to be in there. Mm. Like, you could tell he was like, hang on a minute, hang on. Call everybody back. Let's run this back. Just give me the gloves, Nate. You know what I mean? It was like that kind of vibe. Like, it wasn't, he didn't say that specifically, but he referenced, like, I'm better than all of these guys in here. Like, so who's he referencing there? He's definitely referencing Jake Paul. He's definitely referencing his brother because that's the fight that had just happened. And like, you know what I mean? It was like, it was just kind of a like, don't forget I'm the general. It's like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know. It was a weird moment. It was a weird moment. I kind of felt for him because like imagine if when Nate Diaz made his UFC debut, it was at the same time as when Chimaev made his. Like, the mm-hmm. time's different, right? The attention on the sport's different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when Diaz made his debut, it was a different world. Like, people were still looking at going, what the fuck is this?
You can
do what? You know what I mean? It didn't allow you to really properly connect to the characters. And then because social media wasn't really a thing and the UFC had not really fully crossed over to, like, that level of marketing,
mm-hmm.
do you know what I mean? It was like the word got out, but around the MMA community... And a few people knew who Nick Diaz was, like, in the general population because he was on Strikeforce, which was on regular TV. But imagine how much of a superstar he would have been if he made his debut 10 years later.
Yeah, if he would have done what he did then, now, it would have been majorly different.
Major. So, and he must be feeling that. He must be watching what's going on right now and thinking to himself, I was like a decade too early. You know? That must pain him a little bit. Because he would have been a superstar. I mean, he is a superstar, of course. But the conversation kind of felt like give me a big opportunity and let me remind you, you know. And I would love to see him get his opportunity. Like, isn't Logan Paul matched? I think he's just
with Dillian Daniels.
Oh, jeez, what a mess.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of him.
That'd be a mess. He was pretty good in pro wrestling, though. I saw some highlights of it before he jumped on the plane to come over and sit ringside.
Didn't you say there was like an impersonator of Nick Diaz on Nate's
corner? No. There was a guy in the corner that looked like Nick. Like, just his posture and his facial expression, but he had sunglasses on, like big, like Terminator sunglasses. So you couldn't properly tell. I don't know who he was. Still don't. But he was like in the corner and around Nick. And if you like... Like, if you were like, you know, like two tiers up or something, you were like, that's Nick. That's got to be Nick in his corner. He looked a little bit too fresh-faced, though, and I was quite close. So I'm like, I don't think it is. But it took me a second to figure out. And I don't know, it was weird. And then like all of a sudden, like right after the fight, I heard on the earpiece, they were like Nick Diaz wants to, like Ariel was going, Nick Diaz wants to talk. Nick Diaz wants to do an interview. And I'm like looking around. I'm like Nick's not here. He was even on the list, like, of all the people that were going to attend. Like, Nick was crossed out, and it said not in attendance.
Ah.
And so I'm like Nick wants to talk. I'm like, no, that's not Nick. That's like some like Conor McGregor impersonator. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like weird. And then all of a sudden, like, Nick appeared out of nowhere, like looking like he was going to take a bite out of someone. He was like, he was on edge. He was, you know what I mean? He was like very kind of.
Did you have your mouth guard?
I wasn't taking on a Nick Diaz in that suit. I would have been tangled up in no time. I'd need more movement, especially the collar. I mean, that's a good quality suit. He would have been able to strangle me with it. I'd have been straight jacket off. No shirt, no jacket. I'm not getting strangled by a Gracie black belt. Anyway, shall we get into these fights?
Let's get
You've
into
done
the fights.
Distracting me enough already. Okay, first fight. Oh, hang on. Oh, verdict. Yes, of course. Yes, of course. We've got a league on verdict.
Yes.
Yes, a fantasy league on verdict. Now, I need to get on there again. I always see Ben Askren is kicking us on there every time he's competing with someone. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he's so on the money with his picks. It's amazing because it's like, I don't know. I'm gonna get on there though and have a go because my picks, as you know, are notoriously terrible. But I'm planning on, you know,
stepping up your game.
I've got to.
Because there's pressure.
I've got to. You know.
Yeah.
It's either that or I've got to knock Jake Paul out and get one back that way over Ben because he's kicking ass. Yes. Verdict. Make sure you download the app. Set yourself up an account if you've not got one already, and then you can join our fantasy league, Full Reptile. Make sure you check it out. Okay, first fight. Chris Weidman.
All-American.
Brad Tavares. All-Hawaiian.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that.
quick tell of the tape. Okay, right. 15-6 for Chris Weidman. 19-9 for Brad Tavares. Tavares slightly more octagon time. Of course, Chris Weidman, former champion. 1-inch height advantage for Chris Weidman. 4-inch reach advantage for Chris Weidman. Interestingly competitive across the board, really. I feel like Brad Tavares has probably got cleaner boxing, a little bit more traditional, a bit wider stance. You know, I find he's had a lot of bad luck. He's just been in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's you know, zigged when he should have zagged.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like he could be better in this division. I don't know. And then Chris Weidman, I feel like he went so quickly to his peak and then all of a sudden he was right up at the top and like started tumbling down after that terrible spinning kick against Rockhold.
Mm.
It was like the beginning of the end.
Plus he's coming off that Uriah leg break.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And he's been rebuilt a bunch of times, Chris Weidman. Didn't he have a surgery where they went through the front of his neck to fix his spine?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm sure he was, like, he explained this to me at some point. He was like, yeah, so like because of the bones in the back of his neck, it was easier to go through the front.
Oh my God.
Honestly, he's like Terminator.
That's crazy.
He's been rebuilt a bunch of times.
Well, we saw him. Do you remember seeing the Polaris event where he went against that judo guy, that Owit? And then at the end of it, he was like kind of crying, like just to be able to, you know, like compete with like my leg
I
and
stuff.
I died
six times.
Yeah, just it was crazy to see how much the leg break has impacted him, you know? Because, I mean, he was having a rough time after Luke Rockhold, but he got Joel Romero after that. That's freaking horrible. Musashi, that's a horrible fight. Like, really good technical
strike. Such a good fight in Musashi.
Yeah. Then Kevin Gastelum.
Oh, was that the weird one where it was like the knees to the head and it was deemed a...
No, it's coming off as a win, second round.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a DQ. Because Musashi, Chris Weidman had his hands on the floor and Musashi kneed him in the head. I'm sure that was that fight. Hang on, hold it. Where is it? Oh, it doesn't say. Yeah, TKO knees.
Yeah, it's coming off as a win, so I don't know. But then, you know, like he kind of fought everybody else after really good high-level guys at sort of their peak. And he just couldn't get this confidence build up again. And I love the way when he uses his wrestling, when he goes to the ground, it's very basic movement, but it's very calculated. It's controlled. You can tell that he's pinning things. He implements that wrestling mindset into his grappling, which makes the fight kind of slow down. And that's what I really like about him. But coming back from that into a fight is something, it's scary because he's always going to be Chris Weidman. He's never going to catch a break. It's kind of like the Tony Ferguson, but worse because Chris Weidman knocked Anderson Silva out.
Mm.
And what sort of scares me is that although a lot of Brad Tavares highlights are shown with him with like shorts and sponsorship.
Yeah.
You know, that for me is kind of a signal of a different era and time. And it's not because those skills aren't good enough to compete in this level, because they absolutely are, but their bodies aren't in the right position to compete in this level, even though their skill level might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Chris Weidman is closer to that than Brad Tavares is, even though they're from the same sort of era.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's just crazy. I'm just looking back at Chris Weidman's career and how few fights he had before he was in there with, I mean, a little bit like Cyril Gane, actually. Like, you go, he had two fights, then he fought Uriah Hall in Ring of Combat. Then he had another fight, Ring of Combat. Then he made his UFC debut against Alessio Sakara at 4-0. Then he had another fight, Bongfelt, Tom Lawler, Damian Maia, Mark Munoz, Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
That's crazy. 9-0.
And then Machida at that time, Victor Belfort. And I'm pretty sure that was Belfort, like, pre-USADA. Because he was buff.
Yeah. Is that when he had the haircut, the crucifix and the mohawk? Yeah. For sure. That was...
like, that's not normal.
No. That was a yeah, and the thing, I mean, you look at that run as well, like Rockhold, Romero, Musasi. Do you think he can take Brad Tavares down? Because Tavares has got 80% takedown defense.
Yeah, I just think Brad Tavares is physically more like less beat up.
Yeah, so you have
he's 35. He's 4 years younger. He's not coming off a crazy leg break. He's coming off a knockout loss versus Bruno Silva, which, you know, doesn't really help.
Yeah, but then he got backed up against the fence there.
Mm. But then Vicente Luque was coming off two losses and a knockout and was able to kind of push through it. I think the fact that it's in Boston might help Chris Weidman. You know, like the crowd and stuff might get him going. I'm just scared of him getting a bit too scared and a bit too emotional, because, you know, last time you were in there, you didn't know if you were going to walk again.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's not something simple to overcome.
It's a good matchup. Mm. It's a good matchup. I like it a lot. I think that I think Brad Tavares has always had more to offer than his record would suggest. And I used to train with him in Vegas, and he was very good at every range, just really well rounded. I feel like he's a little bit caught between weight classes. Like, I've always felt like that. He's like a heavily muscled welterweight.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, he is.
A little bit like...
he's never out of shape either.
No, a little bit like Buckley. Like, Buckley's not particularly big, you know what I mean? But he's heavily muscled. He's got too much on his frame for a welterweight, unless he would really have to do something drastic with his diet. I'm not saying he couldn't do it, but...
I think he would just have to lose a lot of muscle mass.
Yeah. Like, Brad Tavares is quite heavily set, but he's not quite... I mean, he's 5'11". According to Wikipedia, what's that say? They round it up. Yeah, 6'1". Of course they do. That's why. Whenever I met somebody, a UFC fan, they're always like, "Oh, you're not as big as I thought you'd be." I'm like, "Yeah, that's because the UFC got me like 6'2". they always round up a couple of inches. You know what I mean? Like, he's just a little bit undersized, and I do feel like that's been the difference in a couple of fights. And plus, he's fought really good fighters.
Yeah,
you know. That beautiful left hook that he got caught with from Rob Whittaker. Little snap front kick to left. It was a weird shot. Really nice. Which way are you going?
I'm going to go Brad Tavares.
Yeah. I'm going to go Weidman.
Yeah, the crowd is going to get
him?
Yeah,
charge
him
up.
He really, like, on the Polaris thing, he looked great. Like, his wrestling looked good, everything.
It's much easier if you've got a fence there that you can... you know, jam them up against.
Yeah.
Like, that was like, if you'd have put a fence around the matchup in on Polaris, it would have forced them to engage more than they did. And Chris Weidman would have preferred, because he wants to maul you wrestling.
Exactly.
I think Chris Weidman does it. So we're going opposite ways, are we?
Opposite ways.
Okay. Jamie, we need to plug these into verdicts as well. My phone's dead. I'll have to do it after the show. Okay. Next one up. Marlon Chito Vera against Pedro Munoz. So, Marlon Vera, 20 wins and 8 losses with 1 draw. Pedro Munoz, 20 wins and 7 losses with 2 no contests. exactly the same amount of fights, almost identical records, but it feels like Munoz is like the previous generation a little bit. And I mean no disrespect by that. He's just, his fighting style certainly feels like that as well.
Yeah, because Marlon Vera's been around forever.
He has. Yes.
Like, he's just, he keeps changing his haircuts and getting more tattoos.
That's what it is. Yeah.
So you don't kind of realize how long he's been in there. And he, like, before looked a bit more baby face.
They showed a video of Sean O'Malley the other day. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course he used to look like that, like an extra at Harry Potter. Like, yeah, he's definitely a Gryffindor. Okay. So. 5'8 for Marlon Vera, 2 inches in height advantage for him over Pedro Munoz, who also stands a bit low as well, a bit squatted. Mm. 5 inches in reach for Marlon Vera. That is a significant reach advantage. A bit slicker, a bit more modern in his movement, aggressive, doesn't mind putting himself at harm's reach. I think he's going to try and capitalize on Pedro Munoz chopping into his lead leg.
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, like, Munoz loves to attack that lead leg. He's got heavy low kicks. And they remind me a little bit of Thiago Alves. Doesn't turn them over quite as much, but the weight of them when they land. And I feel like Vera is the kind of fighter that's going to accept it. He's not going to be like, oh, okay, how do I stop these low kicks and then start my attack? I'm like, okay, I'm going to get low kicked. I'm going to attack him while he's low kicking me.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But here's the thing.
Oh, okay.
They both fought O'Malley. One of them took him out by, like, calf kicks. The other one spent a round and a half till he got eye poked. Doing only that calf kick.
Yeah.
So maybe Chito might return and it might be worse.
Yeah, potentially.
Does that make sense?
Potentially. I mean, you know... That's the downside with Munoz's stance. You know what I mean? He's always in my head. He's always been a box to guillotine fighter. You know, he's like he punches his way into range, blah blah blah, and you level change, and he just wraps the neck up. Mm. Like, really nice, good bite on the neck. And you know, like, I'm not saying that's not a possibility. Chito Vera is a very skilled grappler and a very tricky individual. So even if you wrap his neck, you know he's going to do something chaotic that. He's either going to escape him from the guillotine or snap his neck entirely. You know what I mean? He's that kind of guy. What's he got wins on his record? So, yeah, eight knockout, 8 submission. Black belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu. He's a good grappler as well. But at the same time, you know, there's no reason why he couldn't get tangled up. Like, that high elbow guillotine is showing itself more and more. I could certainly see Munoz clamping something like that on in a scramble and, like, kind of snatching the victory away from him. But I do feel like, this is Marlon Vera's fight to lose a little bit.
Yeah. I really like the way Vera fights. I really like the way he covers. He shells well. When he's in a tie clinch, those elbows and knee, like, he throws it like he means it. Yeah. Like, he wants to murder you.
Yeah.
And it's all such hard, heavy, thudding impact. Front kicks to the midsection. And I think that's going to work really well against Pedro Muniz. Mm-hmm. Just, you know... He can even, like, time it, pick it up when he's going to the calf and just teep him, pressure up against the fence, throw some combinations, get him in the clinch, and then start with those elbows. Because, you know, you don't – what I like about Vera as well is on his grappling, he has great butterfly hooks, great movement, and great submission, but sometimes he gets a little – just overall in the fight, he thinks so much of it as a fight that – Like, he's on that thing that you were talking about earlier. He's as close to as in a fight as you can get. And sometimes that you forget the sport is here.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think, to be honest, I mean, I hear what you're saying, absolutely. And I think that Marlon's quite far down that end as well. Like, he's there for the fight. Mm. But at the same time, he understands that, like, being a bit more technical and vicious, he's going to have more success. And, like, kind of like Sean O'Malley.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, because he's been the, you know, he's the center of attention at the moment, you know, because of this, because of his title shot. He said something interesting on a show the other day. I'm not sure whether it's a countdown show or what, but he said that he always wanted to be famous and he didn't know how he was going to get there. So, and I just thought it was an interesting statement. It's been kicking around in my head because it's very different to, like, How do I explain it? Like, if someone wants to be famous, when I was like in my early teens, if someone wanted to be famous, they were either going to be a singer or a footballer.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were like the options, mm-hmm. right? Like the idea that someone goes, I want to be famous, and then MMA is an option. First of all, I think it's interesting, but second of all, I think the approach is interesting because they're looking at MMA and going, okay, this is a thing that I want to be good at.
Yeah.
Right. Which is even different to people that start MMA as a thing in itself. Like when a kid walks into an MMA gym, they start MMA 8 years old. That's what they're learning. Like that's different again because they're being put in an MMA class and learning MMA. O'Malley went, I want to be famous, and I think I can be famous being good at this thing. So how do I get good at this thing? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's just a different approach. It's mm-hmm. like it's. I don't know. Well, like when I was learning martial arts, it wasn't about sport at all.
Yeah, for right? sure. It wasn't about, well, because, I don't know, you didn't have like Instagram or like all of that.
It was like not getting my ass kicked was the point of me training, cool. right? but his approach is different. And I just, I've gone off on a bit of a tangent here, but the same way I feel like Marlon has the same view of MMA as like, okay, like how do I do this well? Like he has not lost that fighting edge, that nastiness, because you see that with his elbows. Like there's still a real mean streak to him, but he's able to like keep it enough on a leash not to look like Wanderlei Silva. Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
He has better technique than Wanderlei Silva.
Like he's
sure.
slicker and he's meaner and he's more technical.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that
time goes by while he's in there.
Yeah.
It's almost like therapeutic. He's just in there like just releasing these demons.
That's it.
I'm sick of this guy at like the gas station that said this. Bam.
Exactly. That's it. Like if there was some kind of, if Ghostbusters had some kind of like demon sensor and you could watch him, it'd be like one of those heat sensors, you know what I mean? Like I watched something on Instagram the other day of like heat sensors on people in the street when they were farting. What a weird thing. It just popped up on my Instagram feed. You got these little clouds appearing. You know what I mean? I just pictured that, but with Cheetah, like they're coming out of his head or something. They're like a monster coming out of him. Yeah, for sure. Like, I always like that quality in a fighter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's... yeah, that's nice. That's be mean like that. That's what I want to see. I'm going with Cheeto. I really like Pedro. I'm a big fan of his style, and I think he's got some very, very good skills. But his stance and his perhaps predictability is going to be food for Marlon, I think, in this fight. That lead leg.
Yeah.
You know,
because like Corey, he was able to take him down, but Corey had also mixed so much of everything into that fight already with feints, with angle changes, with kicks, with punches, with just everything all together that it was kind of stifling.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Pedro Muniz has that arsenal when it comes to striking to do that same mental thing that Corey was able to do to Marlon Vera.
Sure. And that's the thing is it's like okay, if you're putting him on a spectrum, you've got Corey Sandhagen, Marlon Vera, Pedro Muniz. Sandhagen is another good example. Like when people say who's your favorite fighter to watch right now, at the moment I always say Corey Sandhagen. He's got that quality as well. He's got that nastiness. He's got that ability to quickly figure out how to turn the fight back on his opponent within seconds, which I think is very, very clever. And he's also got that control of his Wanderlei Silva enough. So he's able to kind of measure it out, like dose it, you know? Like he's able to like, okay, well, what we're going to give you this round, we're going to give you stitches and we're going to give you a sore leg and we're going to give you a body shot. You know what I mean? And they're like, okay, that's enough for you. That's like, I'm going to be a shark. I'm going to swim around you while you bleed out a little bit. Like there's that calculation in his game as well. He's able to measure it out.
Dude, he's nasty.
Yeah.
He's nasty.
For sure. And I feel like Marlon Vera's got the same thing, but he's a little bit too closer to... Sandhagen played on it.
Corey Sandhagen's a bit more like sociopathic, was it?
Yeah.
Than Cheeto. Cheeto enjoys it. Corey Sandhagen just doesn't feel nothing.
Yeah. He's American Psycho with it.
Yeah.
But both real favorites of mine to fight. I love watching both fight. I'm going with Marlon Vera.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Okay. Next up, Ian Machado Gary against Neil Magny.
Mm-hmm.
So Magny's stepping in short notice, right?
Of course he is.
Who was Ian Gary lined up to fight initially?
Jeff Neal,
that's it. And yes. And so he's out of the fight. So Neil Magny steps in, of course. Long, rangy, awkward, experienced. Was on a real streak a bit ago. Where's he at right now? Yeah, he's alternating a bit. There was a point where he was just like, where was it? I mean, look at the wins that he's got. It's crazy if you look at his record. Like, he had a few names on his record, but then he lost to Damian Maia, and then he came back a couple of weeks later. That was August 1st, 2015. He came back on August 23rd and beat Eric Silva. Then he came back on November 21st and beat Kelvin Gastelum.
Yeah.
And then in the following March, he beat Hector Lombard. Like, what a wild turnaround that was. He's had, like he beat Johnny Hendricks. He beat Carlos Condit.
The Leech, which is a Robbie giant Lawler, dude.
Already beat Jeff Neal as well. So this is a good, Yeah, I'm interested in this fight because, like, Ian Gary looks better every time. He looks like he's found his range much quicker in these more recent fights than he was on Cage Warriors.
Mm.
Like on Cage Warriors, you could tell there was something slick about the way that he was operating. Like, was it? I'm trying to remember his name. His nickname's Curdimus Prime. I remember that. He's the Kurdish fighter that won IMAF. I can see him.
Curdimus Prime.
I can't remember. Anyway. But that was just a lovely setup finish, and it was a really nice. But then there were times like when he fought Jack Grant when it was a little bit untidy, and it was scrambly, and like in his last couple of fights, I don't know whether it's since he's moved to, he's at Killcliff, right?
Yeah, he's at Killcliff, but he has spent some time in the
Renegade, sometime in
Brazil as well. I saw some photos of him in Brazil, and I saw recently that he was doing a bit of training with Phil Rowe.
Uh-huh. Who's the last person that's fought?
Yeah, but he's also similar to Neil Magny. They're mm-hmm. both tall, they're both rangy, good mixture of strikes.
That's right, isn't it? Neil Magny just lost to Phil Rowe. Sorry, just beat him.
No,
yeah,
just beat him
by split decision. I would like to see. I'd like to see more grappling from Ian Gary, especially given the fact that he started training in Brazil more. You know, he's leaning into the Machado name. You know what I mean? I'd like to see some more of his ground game. And I think Neil Magny would be, because I always think to myself, Neil Magny's got really good grappling. And then I remember what RDA did to him. I was like, oh, that was just like manhandled him. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
And then I thought to myself, well, that seems to me like something that could be exploited. I feel like, you know, that's what would be most impressive for me with Ian Gary. Like to come out and find his range and find a clean knockout would be impressive. But to be able to take him down and beat him on the floor, that would be me being able to go, okay, Ian Gary's now... he's really stepped up his game here. Does that make sense?
Why would he do that?
Just because I think that this is a good opportunity for him to do that. Like the expectation would be Neil Magny would expect Ian Gary to gravitate towards the striking.
Yeah.
Right? So then like him switching it up and putting Neil Magny on his back.
Yeah, it might be, you know? it might be a change of.
But I wonder what his game plan was for Jeff Neal.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? If you were Ian Gary, what would your game plan for Jeff Neal be?
Well, I think it's going to be similar to Rodriguez. You know, step in with the 1-2, step in with a jab, get him to overcommit, because Jeff Neal's freaking powerhouse.
Yeah, he reaches hard.
So he reaches hard, so step back and counter, which is what I feel he's going to do to Neil Magny, because Neil Magny can sometimes make himself a bit vulnerable with his strikes.
Yeah.
To where someone who's waiting for a counter and waiting to do that as part of their strategy is going to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Is it Ponzinibbio that stopped him?
Yeah, Ponzinibbio. Yeah. But yeah. I feel like, for example, if Ian Gary did try and do something like that, where I would find it dangerous is Neil Magny's ability to do darces, and because he has very long limbs, so mm-hmm. catch an anaconda, cast a darce, some type of guillotine. That would be the part that I find really dangerous when it comes to Neil Magny. He's also good in the tie clinch. Mm-hmm. You know, he's good at chasing the back from the tie clinch. He slips to the inside, gets a body lock, and with that hook, just starts chasing it and starts going to that cycle, which can get somebody like Gary tired.
God, you've got 17 decision wins at 28. He's been subbed more times than he's won by submission as well. Mm-hmm. 4 wins by submission, 6 losses by submission. Yeah, I'm interested to see how Neil Magny approaches it. It wouldn't surprise me if he tries to grapple, especially expecting Ian Garry to be able to... I would expect Ian Garry to like try and bully him. You know what I mean? Control the range and bully him at long range. Because he's very good at just kind of being slightly outside of range.
Yeah, but what I saw in the Song fight, for example, was that he was so focused on his punches that he was going to land that he almost disregarded anything his opponent was doing. Almost like you're walking like... Not only like a walking punch bag, but you know those little lights that show up and you have to touch it with something. And that's, I feel, why he got dropped with Song. Because he just came forward closing the distance, not even thinking anything was going to come back. And it did, and it hurt him.
The issue Song can punch, though.
Huh? Song can punch. And I don't feel Magny can bring that. But I do feel like Gary showed a lot of improvement when he fought Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And he showed that maturity in that, yeah.
For sure. Which way are you going? Hang on, I've not done Tale of the Tape, have I? Let me quick Tale of the Tape. So, Neil Magny, 28-11. Ian Garry, 12-0, undefeated. Both 6'3". Are they really? I would imagine Neil Magny be a little bit taller. 6-inch reach advantage for Neil Magny. Maybe he was doing a handstand when I saw him.
Hmm.
That's a long reach advantage, 6 inches. Higher striking output for Ian Garry, 6.85. It's getting towards Max Holloway numbers, that is. What we got? 41% takedown accuracy for Neil Magny, 2.3 per 15 minutes. 63% takedown defense for Ian Garry. Pretty even on striking defense. Good striking accuracy for Ian Garry. Good output. I'm going for Ian Garry.
Yeah, me too.
I think he's going to catch him up against the fence, trap him and stop him.
Yeah. Although Neil Magny sometimes has wins over people that, what? Little bit like Paul Craig.
Yeah.
Like has a win over like Ankalaev and stuff like that. You're just like, what?
He's a little bit Brian Barberena. You can never count him out because he might get to you if you give him the opportunity.
Yeah. Barberena almost got Leon Edwards.
Exactly. Okay. So we're both going to Ian Garry?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Co-main event. Zhang Weili against Amanda Lemos. Powerhouse.
Dude, I am so excited for this fight. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Both of them are, though, aren't they?
I'm ridiculously excited. And I don't think this fight has had enough media attention to give it credit for how good it's going to be.
So straight off the top, who's your pick? Who are you going to go with?
Zhang Weili.
Okay. Stoppage or decision?
I think stoppage.
Okay. I'm going to do Taylor Tape.
Okay.
I'm going to let that marinate for a minute and then you're going to tell me why.
Okay.
So Zhang Weili with a record of 23 wins and 3 losses. A very impressive record. What was she, 18-1 coming into the UFC? Mm-hmm. Amanda Lemos, 13 wins, 2 losses and a draw. Both 5'4". Amanda Lemos with a 2-inch reach advantage. Slightly higher striking output for Zhang Weili, slightly higher takedown accuracy and defense for Lemos, even though she fires a few less takedowns overall. Better striking accuracy for Lemos, more strikes thrown by Zhang Weili. I mean, you've got to think, though, her fight with
Joanna.
It's just going to throw the stats way off, isn't it?
For real.
I mean, that was... Like how do you quantify a head swelling like that? You gave her a second head. You know what I mean? That's like is there a stat for that? I don't think there is there? Okay. So tell me why Zhang Weili is gonna win. And did you say stoppage?
Yes.
What, a sub or She's got a good armbar.
No, I think maybe like TKO.
Ooh,
yeah,
really?
I think TKO.
What, from top position, ground and pound?
Yeah, like following it after a knee or an elbow, kind of like she did to Andrade. Okay. I think something like that's going to happen.
As fast as that, or
no? I think it's going to go more because Amanda Lemos is a lot more calculated. Mm. But there's still that bit of her that because she's such a powerhouse, because she has the power to knock people out, and she sits like she does. Mm. That makes sense. Like she's waiting to come and like nail you with it,
for sure.
Because she knows she's gonna put you in the canvas, you know.
For sure.
And with that comes a lot of power, but then you also need a lot of responsibility not to overthrow it. And I think Wei Li has that same thing, but she's had more fights, mm-hmm. and a lot more attention and sort of like championship honing to control that, to pull that back a bit, to be a little bit tighter with her punches, to not be so like overly aggressive. And Lemos, man, like I love her style. She's really fun to watch. Her fight with Mizuki was awesome.
Yeah.
And plus, I really feel like they should have not told her to like clinch and do that. Because in the striking, because Mizuki, mm-hmm. she was a bit like, I don't care if you're going to hit me, you know? Lem was just like, I've hit this girl with everything. What is wrong with you? Especially because she's like a little bit chubby. Uh-huh. So you kind of like discount some people a little bit. And, you know, like she was fast. She was slipping and she was doing good. But she was doing the best when Lemos was trying to kill her. And she was, you know, like countering off that. Because Lemos sometimes goes with a punch. And although when she hits you, it's like crazy. But if you time it, you can get out of the way and strike. And Zhang has the level and the skill to do that. Plus the power and the confidence that she has the power. I'm like not shutting up. But okay, one more thing. With that fight with Mizuki, there was one thing that really like pissed me off.
Hand on hip pissed off, like real
yeah,
pissed
like,
off.
I was just like, what? Let me rewatch this. So they were in the clinch, and Mizuki did really good elbows from there. This is why I think Zhang Weili can use that. But Mizuki went for a takedown, and Lemos had that overhook. But what she did was the overhook so the person doesn't get the back. She threw herself forward to then go back to it. She gripped the leg and then collapsed it on the little arc behind the knee. And then from there, she used the other leg to lift it up, turned, and took her down. It was sick.
There are people listening to this right now, driving, jiu-jitsu players that are going,
don't crash.
Like wandering off
okay,
the road
just
with
go
their
back
car.
And you watch it. I should have put what round it was.
Yeah.
But okay.
Give us a, put it in the comments. Give it a round and a, ti- and
yeah,
a time
Yeah, I will.
So
it was sick.
It.
I had to rewatch it just because Dominic Cruz goes, oh, she just powered it in it. He didn't say in it, but might as well have.
She just
used power. She just did, like, just discredited the entire move so much, which it made me so angry because it was really cool. She was going for one thing, and she has a lot of really good tricks. Like Marina, she had that tie, and then she turned, used the leverage. Like, she has good tricks up against the cage for you to take her down.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that they said that, oh, it was just power, oh, my goodness.
Jamie, I'm going to pitch a new idea to you, Jamie. It's called The Loud Room.
Oh, no.
And it's going to be like a 45 seconds of why Veronica thinks this fight is really good, or why this fight is really shit, or why this fighter needs to delete their Instagram. And we'll do it Loud Room. We'll crank the lights. We'll do it the opposite, the Dark Room, where it's
he
kinda...
doesn't get it because listen. I am Hispanic, okay? This is how we talk.
His when panic.
We...
My panic.
Yeah, your panic.
My panic, yeah.
So, you know, when things get us, you know, animated, we get into it.
Yeah.
And that got me.
Yeah, it did.
Angry.
Angry, I could tell.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Okay. You can talk now.
Can I? Are you sure?
okay, yeah. I got my points across.
No, I mean, I don't disagree with anything you said. I think Lemos has to fight in bursts, and she has to pick her opportunities. Like, Zhang Weili can be drawn into a fight, and she can also be a little bit too overconfident sometimes. Like, you think the way that Rose knocked her out, just like sliding her leg back out of range, she's like, you're not going to catch me with that. You know what I mean? It was a little bit like, okay, like, let's get started. And sometimes she can be a little bit too settled in herself and not quite, Like, because she's so good, she knows she's good.
Yeah.
Like, she feels she's good. The fight, when the fight starts, she's like, I'm good. I'm going to show you how good I am. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a question in her mind. So until she opened her eyes and realized that Rose had taken the belt off her, like, in her head, she's like, there's just no doubt I'm going to win this.
Yeah.
Right? So if I'm Lemos, I'm looking at making the most of that. I'm looking at trying to draw that feeling out of her, which is maybe a little bit too calculated for Lemos. But if that's the skill set I had that's hers, that's what I would be doing. I'd be forcing my way into range, throwing punches, but then I'd be disengaging before she got the opportunity to grab a hold of me. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't really want to grapple with her. I just want to occasionally put her on the back foot and not hit her with anything of quality. And then I want to kind of settle back and let her come to me. Right, and kind of let that little kind of swagger, like, okay, here we go, my turn. Give her that, and then when she starts to throw counter again,
yeah,
you know, it's a little bit like the
A little bit like what do you call Andrade did to Lemos though when she caught her with that that standing arm triangle.
I don't know if I'd waste my energy trying to squeeze one of those on her though, because she's.
What I'm saying is that like that can be brought out of Lemos as well.
For sure, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the best way of playing it. If I'm Zhang Weili, I'm gonna use my kicking game as best I can. Mm. I'm gonna try and keep her right on the end of everything that I'm doing. And any time I see that charge into range, I'm just gonna move away.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna get out of range. And if I find myself back to against the fence, then I'm gonna stay covered on the inside and grab a body lock when she crashes in, because she is a little bit wide when she punches sometimes,
mm-hmm.
especially when she starts getting excited. I think it's a tough test for Lemos.
Yes,
really tough. She has to do everything. She has to do everything correctly and hold herself back a little bit.
Yeah,
to win this fight, I think.
I did like that when she fought Marina, for example. She was sort of holding herself back with the thought that it was five rounds. Like in the second round, when she did that trip and got her back to the choke, she tried really, really hard for that choke. So if you imagine just gripping onto something for as hard as you can, thinking it's going to finish a mm-hmm. UFC main event, you know? So as hard as you can, plus add an extra 30% is how hard she was squeezing.
Yeah.
Then she was able to adjust, stay on top, and just kind of hold and wear the round out. And I mean, the commentators were kind of giving her a little bit of like crap for not punching or doing this. But I thought in reality, she was conserving her energy. It was kind of like you put that nitro button.
Nitrous, yeah.
Yeah. You need to like calm down for a little bit for that to recover and go back up.
Yeah. 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 The other thing as well is Lemos has never done any further than three rounds. You've got to think that there's a real advantage in the rounds that Zhang Weili's done. So you're picking Zhang Weili, are you?
Yes.
Any particular pick? Particular way? You say it's a finish.
Yeah, I think in like maybe fourth round or something.
Yeah.
Like they both went at it and then Zhang Weili's able to. I think she's going to use a lot of those body kicks because that was good when Marina used it.
Mm.
But then Lemos is really good at lifting that front leg and hitting you to the midsection.
Yeah.
That's something that she does that's kind of damaging. When she switches southpaw, she does that body kick quite a bit. But yeah, I just think Zhang is... They're not at the same level of attention.
Mm.
You know, like Zhang Weili now has this whole championship type of camp that life is tailored to her, which when you get to that, when you are making the money that she is and have the backing of an entire nation like she has, it's a lot harder to compare with the training.
Yeah.
You know, like you can do so much, but when you got all those cards stacked against you, man, it's it's rough.
Okay, so final pick, Zhang Weili. I'm going the same way. Okay, back from tea break. Right, you can see I've I have refreshed my brew.
Yeah, I went for chai this time.
Chai this time.
Yeah, I put a bit of milk in them. I'm totally into it right now. Yeah. I'm going to tell you. They're so good.
I'm feeling a bit fancy as well with these glass mugs, you see, because then I can see it brewing and it's like...
Yeah, it's like, baby, you worth it.
Therapeutic.
Get yourself a nice tea.
Okay, right. Main event time. So, Sean O'Malley getting his opportunity at the bantamweight title, taking on Aljamain Sterling. So, tale of the tape. 23-3 for Aljamain Sterling, 16-1 with one no contest for Sean O'Malley. I have done a war room on this, so make sure you go and check it out. 4-inch height advantage for Sean O'Malley, 1-inch reach advantage. High striking output, high wrestling output for Aljamain Sterling. Decent success with his takedowns. Very good at chaining them together and scrambling and forcing something to happen. Awkward Suluev stretch, etc., etc., etc. What's your take? Is Sean O'Malley going to win the bantamweight title?
I don't think he is. I think he has a chance to do it.
Mm.
But I think overall, like if I put it into your fight blender of what comes out.
Yep. A bloody mess always comes out in the fight blender.
But I think more times than not, Sterling would win, which is why I'm going to pick for him. Because obviously, I mean, Sean O'Malley can have his McGregor Aldo moment where he catches him with something, you know, especially because we've seen it possible with Sterling and Marlon Moraes, and we've seen him dip his head. And it's not a possibility. And because it's happened before, it's something that we can foresee happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it has to be so star-aligned perfect, I feel.
Yeah. But don't you think that's what Sean O'Malley brings to the table?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, Conor McGregor did beat Aldo.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like it didn't happen.
That's what I'm saying. So like, and I feel like if McGregor and Aldo fought 10 times, I would have Aldo probably winning 8 or 7.
Yes.
At featherweight, of course. You know what I mean? But like, I don't know. I feel like maybe when I was recording the war room, I kind of talked myself into Sean O'Malley winning.
I mean, while we were watching the fights and stuff, you did kind of have it like that because you thought he could find in the openings. You thought he could make him, you know, overcommit or fall into traps that he didn't know that he was kind of falling into.
I just feel like there's more measurement on Sean O'Malley's side. And I mean, I kind of went through it on the war room, didn't I? I kind of talked it out a little bit. Like, and I know that I've got a bias towards one over the other. I would always rather be in control than not. Right.
Okay.
I mean, and I think most people would say that.
But is it that, or is it because the fights sometimes are more exciting because it looks more clean in comparison?
I don't like feeling that the fighter is doing, even if what they're doing is random, even if their weapon selection is random. I want them to be choosing it to be random. And when I'm watching Aljamain Sterling, I don't feel like he's necessarily choosing what comes next before he's throwing it.
Maybe he just has a really good, like, I don't know, flow to it.
Yeah.
Reaction to seeing openings and then going for them. Instead of taking so many steps to create it, he attacks the openings that are there.
Yeah.
Because in the training videos, that's something kind of that I see a lot. It's a lot of like flow drills into a submission or flow drills into something. So you get accustomed to seeing a lot of different ways to attack a certain thing. And instead of, if you go to the approach of, I'm going to have this really clean technique down the pipe, you know, Dutch kickboxing for me is something that's kind of like that. It's like 1-2, hook to the body, low kick. You know, it's very set patterns. But I feel like Sterling does a lot of it because he's drilling a lot.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is it like, I don't know. I'm trying to be objective about it because like to the way Aljamain Sterling, I'm sure he does pad work. And I'm sure when he's hitting pads, he finishes and he feels great. And he's like, yeah, that was a great workout. I feel good. I was hitting hard. I was kicking. But he's not like the work that we do is like we're refining stuff. Like we're trying to make it as close to perfect as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then we're tweaking that a little bit more because we're expecting it to be a bit more reckless in the fight.
Yeah.
Right. So when I'm watching Aljamain Sterling sparring or hitting pads or anything, like he's open, the technique's not great. You know what I mean? And the other thing as well is like Sean O'Malley's got decent strike selection and he's got some good skills that he uses, you know, some good setups. He's trained well. But because he's thinking about what he's doing, he's less likely to fall into a habit of his own and leave himself open. This is something I've been trying to figure out in my head since I've done the War Room and tried to understand what it is about Aljamain Sterling's style that I feel is vulnerable. And it's because he's working off set patterns that he's not in control of, right? The things that he's doing in the fight are things that he does in sparring. Dip and punch or dip and kick or, you know what I mean? There's a variety of stuff that he'll do in the fight, which is the things that he finds comfortable to do in sparring,
mm-hmm.
right? But if he's not choosing those things, if he's just button mashing and whichever one comes out next is coming out, or, well, he keeps dipping his head, so I'm going to do the flying knee. He's not observing himself, so he's not watching the bad habits that he has, the things that make him predictable, right?
Yeah.
Like Sean O'Malley's coach, Tim Welsh, picked up on the habit of PT Yan slipping and moving his head away.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice observation. You go, okay, this is something we can capitalize on. Aljamain Sterling makes mistakes that he's not aware that he's making because he doesn't get picked off by people in sparring because he doesn't have people that are thinking in a calculated way when they're striking.
Yeah.
He's training with other people that are coached like him.
Yeah, they have the similar
Iaquintas and the Merabs. So it's like, okay, let's go. We're working hard. So we're doing good. Like, he comes in incredible shape, and that's why he gets away with a lot of the mistakes that he makes. But there are a lot of points in there where I feel like Sean O'Malley can watch the tape and go, every time he does that, he does this.
But that's suggesting that it's going to be like a striking match.
No, not necessarily. But like, look at Masvidal against Ben Askren. Right, that was a really good observation by Masvidal that if I put him under pressure, he's going to level change. He's going to try and get a takedown early in the fight. I'm going to run at him, make him think fast. His habit is to put his head towards my right side.
Mm-hmm.
So like that calculation was not taken into account by Ben Askren. And when he went in to fight Damian Maia, he still had not comprehended that Masvidal had watched the tape and predicted where his head was going to be if he was under pressure.
Yeah.
So my concern is that Aljamain Sterling still, even though he got knocked out by Moraes, he still does things with his head that he might look back on in a few years and go, I can't do that because I remember when I did it against Sean O'Malley and he kicked me in the face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can right? see that. Yeah,
like, I just don't think he's aware of when he's vulnerable because he gets away with it.
But I think you would be aware after you got head kick knocked out like that.
But he still does it.
But he's in safer angles when he does it now. He's in a bit tighter.
No, he's
not
quicker, so he's there less. Like, I don't think he is much safer. And his energy management doesn't demonstrate that he's in complete control of what he's doing either. Because he sometimes works too hard. He gives 120% in the first round when 90% would have been perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm not saying that that's a good way of measuring, but if you're doing five rounds, this is what Aldo was so good at. Right? Aldo almost always won four or five rounds because there was always a round when he was like, yeah, I'm just going to... He just and he doesn't have that kind of measurement. Like, you watch his fights against Peter Yan, and it's like, okay, here we go. As long as I'm doing something, he's doing nothing. As long as I'm attacking, he's always defending. So he's constantly going, and there's no ability to kind of pump the brakes. He doesn't look comfortable when he's under pressure.
Do you think there's a similarity in that and how Tony Ferguson was before?
Yeah.
In terms of the striking.
For sure. Like I could certainly see Aljamain Sterling getting caught by Sean O'Malley and then getting a fight with, then doing a rematch with Peter Yan, then getting caught by Peter Yan. And do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, Peter Yan, it wouldn't have surprised me if he'd have landed that, you know, the one that he got on Uriah Faber, where he pulled his head down and onto a kick.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing that Aljamain Sterling, I feel, is that's going to be the way to beat him. And I feel like Sean O'Malley is going to be able to see that head dipping into the center line, the shots coming up the center line, knees, kicks. He's going to keep cutting angles that Aljamain Sterling is not wise to. He's not aware that he's vulnerable when Sean O'Malley's making him vulnerable. Like Eddie Wineland, right? A great fighter, good fighter to watch. A gunslinger, hands down. Let's go, right? He just didn't recognize the danger that he was in when he was in that danger. And yeah. I think that Aljamain Sterling might be in the same situation. He has to work constantly to stop Sean O'Malley getting into the fight.
But that's kind of what he does. And that's what's made him a champion,
for sure. But then the difference is, and the reason why Aljo was able to beat Peter Yan was because Peter Yan has a tendency to, a little bit like Korean Zombie, has a tendency to wait for the right moment sometimes. And he doesn't feel like much is happening, but because he's doing nothing and his opponent's doing something, they're winning the round.
Yeah.
Right? So Peter Yan put himself at a deficit with Sterling because he was waiting for the right moment to get started, and Sterling just, he was way ahead on the scorecards. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just kind of feel like that's Sterling's route to victory. He has to be in supreme condition because conditioning is like 50% of his game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right? Like, and he cuts a lot of weight. He actually saw him mention that this is going to be the last time he fights at 135, because after he's moving up, because, you know, for Merab to, it's Merab's time, but also because the weight cuts are a little bit too much. And he's like, cut.
Yeah, he's shredded. And I don't want to take anything. I'm not trying to take anything away from the technical abilities of Sterling. Like, he is a good wrestler. His back take, Suluev stretch was really nice. There are good skills in his game, there's no doubt. And those good skills work really well because he's supremely conditioned and he keeps a high pace on his opponents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can say that about Sean Strickland, except I think Sterling has a lot better.
Strickland's a much better technician, but he's a good example, like an extreme example of I'm just gonna keep going, so you can't ever get into it.
Yes,
I don't know.
I just feel like he doesn't allude to that fact. Like, he got in the octagon and he said, look, I can't be Mike Tyson coming in knocking people out. I can't be this other person.
Why not?
I can only be myself.
What? There's not a person on the face of this planet with the athletic ability that Aljamain Sterling's got that can't pack a power punch. The reason he's not knocking people out is because he's not punching correctly. Like, it's an unfortunate fact. I'm sorry. If he lands the right punch in the right place, he would knock his opponents out. The reason why he's not is because he's not landing correctly. He's not planted to the floor. His back foot's not dug into the canvas.
So, like, Usman had the difference when he went over to...
Look at the difference with
Trevor
Usman,
Whitman, and then right? He started knocking everybody out.
Look at the difference. Like, look at what he did with a jab cross. Mm. That's spectacular. That's really, really good coaching from Trevor Whitman, right? Because Trevor Whitman's like, okay, right. This is who you are as a package. What can I bolt onto this to make you way more devastating, right? Like, there are certain things about Aljamain Sterling you're like, okay, right. So he's very, very well-conditioned. He keeps a hell of a pace. He's good at flowing from one thing to another. He's good at making decisions in the moment. Sometimes he gets stuck in bad positions, like when he's on his knees, in on the legs against Peter Yan, right? Peter Yan was getting frustrated because Aljamain Sterling was spending time there, which is, and I don't
feel
care
like
what,
it's a resting position for him.
Yeah, but it's not a rest. Like, what we were watching the other day, we were watching a fight the other day, and I said the same thing. But it's not a rest position, because if I'm gassed and I want to rest, the last thing I'm going to do is shoot a double on somebody up against the wall, right?
Yes.
Like, it's not a resting position. It's a holding
a lot
position.
Of people do it though.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is it's a holding position.
But if he's so confident that you can't choke him and that you can't out wrestle him and that you can't circle to his back and he's there and you're kind of like, oh, what can I like get, you know? Because it's not one championship. It's not pride. It's not any of that. You can't knee him in the head. If you could knee him in the head, he wouldn't be doing that position. But he's found a way to kind of rest. I know it's not like the smartest way,
yeah,
or not anything,
look,
but if you're scared that if you overcommit to him, he's going to be in your legs and chain something together. Then you're less like you're precautious of it. So you're not realizing that time's taken away. Like some people lay in guard, like open guard, and the other person, you know, is like, oh, I don't want to like jump into a triangle. So let me just kick this legs over here out there. I feel that's kind of similar to what happens.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. But it's like I don't know. The way that he fights is it's risky, but he gets away with it because he's got good conditioning. Like there are lots of positions and lots of times where if someone's given the space to set him up, they would really hurt him.
Mm.
Like if I was coaching him, I would be like, dude, like you can't keep doing that with your head. Like that's six times this round you've put your head down to the left side without it being covered. Like he's pouring with his back hand and his other hand's like hanging down by his ankle. Like you can't do, like you've been able to get away with it for so long. Let's correct it before. Oh no, sleep mode. Like let's correct it before someone shows it you in a title defense. And that's the thing. Like I'm not, his team are great, but I just don't, I think he needs a new set of eyes. Like if you put him with Trevor Whitman, you would have a different version of Aljamain Sterling. His feet would be planted. He would step into range. Even someone like Dwayne Ludwig would do a really good work with him because he's got that ability to switch stance and he is fast. Like you could take what TJ Dillashaw did really well and give it to Aljamain Sterling. And he would be able to do it really well. And it would give him more command over the decisions that he's making. Yeah. At the moment, he's going to be going, oh, I'll throw this. Oh, I'll throw this. It might as well be a fruit machine of decisions, right? On the other side, you've got Sean O'Malley and his camp, because that's a big part of it. And they're like absorbing this. They're going, okay, well, when he does this, he's doing this. And like it's far more of a chess game for Sean O'Malley's camp than it is for Aljamain Sterling's camp.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's work hard. He's grappling. Is of course on a really strong level, and I do feel like if he's able to keep pressure on O'Malley, he will eventually be able to break him down and hold him down, and then I think O'Malley would potentially give his back in a scramble, and of course you know Suluev stretches are perfect for someone like O'Malley with his body type,
mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Yeah, I think more of that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm most likely going to pick Aljamain Sterling, but that's based on everything that he brings to the table. I feel like Sean O'Malley's kind of got a, like, if he played the level enough, he'd eventually figure it out,
mm-hmm.
Even if he's not at the physical abilities of Aljamain Sterling or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, physically, you're not going to tell me.
No, there's no, of course.
Also, those shorts do not help him.
Shorts, which ones?
The ones that he wears, like all tight. Like, he should wear something. Who? O'Malley.
Oh, does he wear? I don't know. Does he wear skinny shorts? Does he?
Yeah, he just.
He's got no ass, though.
Yeah,
there's nothing.
Exactly.
Like, how do they not just fall down?
That's what I'm like trying to say. But, like,
it's just. It's like when I get mystery that pair of those rough ass Valentino shorts. And a pair of smalls, he's pulled them up and they just fell down again. Like.
Yeah, like physically, if you look body type, how is Jermaine Sterling has like a back like that?
Yeah, well,
you know,
I mean, look, but that's the reach, isn't it? Right, like Sean O'Malley's 4 inches taller, but his reach is only 1 inch advantage.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because Aljamain Sterling's got those shoulders. He looks incredible. I mean, I think this is a really competitive fight. I really do. I feel like there's a lot of ways that Sean O'Malley can better Aljamain Sterling. I feel like he's got to snipe, though, in the pockets where Aljamain Sterling's not smothering him.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is there going to be that? They're going to be few and far between those moments, you know?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like a 3-2 decision for Aljamain.
You reckon, yeah.
Yeah.
I could see O'Malley dropping him. I can see him catching him
with
something.
Yeah, I can see a lot of that happening and like almost finishing with a rear naked choke or having the back for a while or doing this. But I can definitely see O'Malley getting like taken down and controlled and just looking up like, oh, he's not doing anything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Spreading pink and green hair dye all over the canvas as he sweats it out. So which way are you going?
I told you, Aljamain.
Oh. I thought I was going to be able to try and sway you the opposite way, and then I could pick out Jermaine.
No.
Well, should I go Sean O'Malley then, just for a...
That's who you've been going for, let's be honest.
No, I'm
going
to pick out Jermaine. I'm going
to
pick out
Jermaine. That's only because he wants to have a good pick.
It's not. It's nothing to do with that.
Yes, it is.
Who's Ben Askren picking?
He's going back. 100% Ben Askren is going to pick the better wrestler.
Oh, yeah, of course he will. Damn it.
So,
yeah,
okay.
But who's Masvidal
pick? So you know how
pick?
I mentioned, oh my God, if I pick too much like Dan, then, you know, I'm probably wrong. Dan's gone like reverse. He's just like, oh no, where's Veronica going? Okay.
Let me text Masvidal, see who he's picking. I'm going to pick out Jermaine Sterling. I am.
Is that what you've been saying all week?
No, it's not.
We've been watching it. He's like, oh, he's going to tag him with something. Yeah, I can see it. Go ahead. Pick O'Malley. At least if you're right, you'll have that. You know, at least if you're right, you'll have, yeah, in the end, I picked O'Malley. Because I've done that, so, and I've taken the victory.
Is that right?
Yeah, like Charles Oliveira, Benil Dariush, I did that. I was like, I can't pick against my boy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a surprise. Okay. I'll pick Sean O'Malley then. Where's my rainbow wig? Where did I put that? I'll pick Sean O'Malley.
All right. You should have to do like a strand of hair in pink or something.
Should
if
I,
he
yeah.
Wins.
Just this little grave streak.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Coming
just
through.
Do that, but in pink.
I'm looking like, what's his name off Batman? Ra's al Ghul. Is that what he's called? I'll start taking Liam Neeson's role soon. All right. Okay. I'm right on the fence about this because I can see Sterling just mauling him. And now I'm going to go right. I'm going to flash back to this moment where I'm like right on the fence. And you're going to go, yeah, you should pick Sean O'Malley. I'm going to be watching him getting wrestled in the fourth round, staring up at the clock like that, posted on one arm going, he's not even doing anything. And Aljamain Sterling just creeping around to his back.
Yeah, exactly what
Sarah
I said
back,
was going to happen.
Go Aljo! Get him, Aljo!
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know what's going to be the worst part? He's going to be in Boston and everybody's going to be rooting for Sean O'Malley. That's fucking... Sorry.
Just cussing up the place.
No, I'd be
oh
like
my goodness.
Wasn't everybody going for like Henry Cejudo and he was somewhere like near him?
I don't know.
Where was that fight?
He's just, he's you know, he's an interesting character. He's got people on board.
Yeah, in New Jersey. He was literally fighting in New Jersey and people were going for Cejudo. I don't understand, man.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, I'll pick Sean O'Malley then. Okay. Is that everything? Have we covered everything?
We've
That's
covered
all the fights,
it. Remember
it?
To like.
Oh,
put a,
yeah.
Put a comment.
Yeah, well done for remembering to say that to start the show. That was good work by you. One thing. You have one thing to remember.
I have a lot of things to remember.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm the one that keeps this operation going.
I'm not even gonna deny it. Make sure you check out our sponsors. Go to drinkag1.com and use the code outlawed. drinkag1.com/outlawed. You'll get a year's free supply of vitamin D3 and K2. You'll get 5 free travel packs as well as all the stuff that you need to certainly put yourself on the right track on a daily. And everyone needs tea in their life. We love coffee, but tea has a special place. And Harney and Sons, their tea is spectacular. This is the tune-up. I mean, it's everything I want in a tea. And you've got the... What have you got?
Chai.
You're
time.
On chai.
Yeah,
you had
I
the golden,
golden
milk
before.
Earlier. Mm. Yeah. Really, really good stuff. If you use the code FULLREPTILE, you will get 15% off. And they've got a sale on wellness teas at the moment. They're going to do breakfast teas coming up soon.
Yeah. And they ship worldwide. So wherever you are, you could have nice, fancy tea.
Nice, fancy tea. And the packaging's lovely as well, isn't it?
Yeah, this is okay, why, wait, like, one second. Oh, hang on, we're already at the end, so might as well just have a look here. Look at that. Imagine when your friends come over, you just take this out, put it on the table.
That's it.
They're going to know. You don't mess around. Yeah, yeah. Although I don't give this to Jamie because he always forgets to drink his tea. I've made you like 8,000 teas, mate, and you just like leave it there. So, yeah.
He doesn't like drinking them. He just dips his fingertips in. That's just to cool his fingertips down. His fingertips are red hot from all the.
Yeah, so if you're having tea, don't give these to Jamie because
save these for yourself.
Save it for yourself because he forgets.
Harney.com. Go and check them out. Harney and Sons, awesome teas, and of course AG1. Thank you very much. Enjoy the fights, and we'll see you next time.